Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? Get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network with Pepsi Max, proud sponsor of the UEFA Champions League. For the love of it.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now then, you're welcome along. As mentioned, we will bring you Micheál Martin's speech when it comes at 5 o'clock. I see that Cabinet, according to all the journalists on Twitter, have agreed to move the country to level 5 restrictions. That Cabinet meeting has concluded. The level 5 restrictions will take effect from midnight Wednesday for 6 weeks, to be reviewed after 4 weeks. People can still meet up outdoors with one other household away from their home. More information for you as we get it across the evening. But in the meantime, we are joined by Ronan O'Gara. Good evening, Ronan.
Hiya, Joe. How you doing?
I'm all right. Interesting day here. So Exeter 31, Racing 27. If people didn't catch this over the weekend, there was lots of sport on. They missed an epic. I mean, certainly the best final since Leinster's comeback in 2011 and probably well beyond that as well. It was ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, it was hard, obviously, looking at it, to think it was a final, obviously, with the surreal circumstances of, obviously, the sport was having zero role in the game. But in terms of tries served up and in terms of drama, I think it was hugely fulfilling. I think from Racing's point of view, I would say that they would feel incredibly gutted to not have got over the line. I think they can't give up 14 points at the start of the game to Exeter. And I think, as we now realise, that Teddy Ebron had probably wasn't anywhere near 100%. And unfortunately, in a cup final, you just can't do that against a quality team like Exeter.
It's funny you mentioned Ibrahim, and that's with Machino on the bench as well, who's a quality player waiting on the bench in that exact position. We were watching the game in a Virgin studio, and early on, I think Ibrahim kicked out on the full in the first 5 minutes even, and Fergus McFadden was in studio, and he didn't think Ibrahim looked right even at that stage. And there was a point where he was arguing with the coach and saying, no, I'm going to stay on a bit longer. I mean, that's a big luxury to carry, especially when you've Machino on the sideline.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. I think you've nailed it there. I think Teddy had more errors in 20 minutes than he had in a season and a half. And, you know, you look at his, probably the contrast to the, when I was, I think I was, yeah, it was, or no, I wasn't in the, was in the club, but the game, his kicking game against Leinster in Bilbao, was it? I think he just had an extraordinary feel for the ball that night. But everything on this occasion turned to a negative, and you can't give a team like Exeter 14-0 lead. And from a strategy point of view, I think, you know, when you're looking to your nine to probably kick in pressure zones, he passed to Finn Russell, and not alone did he pass it to him, but he put him on his left foot and he gave him very little option about how to play.
Exeter punished those mistakes and did so ruthlessly in those first 14 minutes. Their power, their forwards, that power game at times looks near impossible to stop. I mean, you could accuse it of being one-dimensional, but like when it's that brilliant, it's clearly very impressive.
Yeah, I think, and obviously we played them in Europe, home and away, and obviously they beat us, and so our team weren't good enough, obviously, to get near them. But there was some good learnings from that. I think when they get in their jaw, it's too late. What's crucial is actually the step before that. How can you deprive them of especially their line out 15, 10 metres out from your line. The writing is on the wall even at that stage. So you have to have a policy at trying to, you know, I mean, using your 22 nearly as a goal line, because for them, their capacity to play the pick and go game is superior to all our team in Europe. And that's essentially, I think, why they have won the European Cup. And that's meant as a compliment to them, that they are very, very good and far superior to other teams in that area of the pitch.
Yeah, I think Sam Simmons is the top scorer in the competition. You know, just the total opposite to the Racing approach. Why, as a defence, can't you stop them once they get inside your 22? What's so brilliant about what they do, this pick and go game?
I think it comes back to the recruitment too. I think speaking to a few guys from Baxter, a few of the coaching staff over the years, I think their profiling is very interesting about the players they go after and how they see the game, and the predetermined latch near the line, and they have such trust, I think, and detail in how they want to play the game. And, you know, it probably became more difficult for them in the fact that with the, I suppose, poaching laws now favouring the defensive team, any bit of hands-on or lifting the ball, it's usually a defensive penalty. But they've managed to master it to such an extent that the opposition just can't get, you know what I mean, they can't get any windows to potentially poach against them. So I think it's trust, and trust comes from, I suppose, having periods of times with teammates in extremely difficult periods, and that's what they've done over a 10-year time block. If you look at Garen Steedson's, I suppose, time in the club and his progression and the progression of the club, it's phenomenal what they've done, and it's actually a great rugby story.
Yeah, 10 years ago in that very city, they were making their way into the Premiership for the first time, so it's been really an exceptional achievement by all concerned. You said Racing will be gutted. And they got really, really close. I mean, they somehow clawed their way back into this game. And but even throughout doing that, they seemed to throw in crazy mistakes. They score try, never seemed to take the restart. And then Finn Russell jumps to mind. His pass for the Henry Slade try. You know, we can dress this up. That's just unacceptable for a professional to do.
But that's his game, Joe. I disagree with you.
But doesn't he need to sort his game out if that's his game?
Well, how did they get to the final by him playing like that?
So, there, though, for that pass, that's madness.
But we're all experts on the coach in terms of that moment, you know what I mean? He would be the first person to put up his hand and go, yeah, I haven't read that well. And that's a huge probably disappointment with him. But I think if you go through how he plays the game and instinctively as he plays, I would probably imagine with hindsight he would have kicked past it as opposed to passed it. Yeah, he got it brutally wrong, and that's what happens. But at other periods throughout the season, and in that game, he was able to pick out passes that no other people are able to pass. But I get you. You'd love to find a little bit of middle ground in terms of, does it all have to be all in or not in at all? But I think that's the fascination of him.
Well, I mean, if he's playing in a game, I'm watching. You know, he is a joy to watch, and there's something beautiful about the way he goes about his business. And the moment of magic in the semi-final at the death is the riposte to the point I've made. But I am surprised he doesn't at times go for a touch more middle ground, like in those moments. I don't know, can he not control himself, or has he been given carte blanche, do you suspect, by the management team to say, look, you're going to make mistakes. We think when it all comes out in the wash, having you doing your thing is going to, you know, beat the downsides. So just do what you want.
I would think so. Yeah. I think so. And that's what good coaches do as well. I think they know their players. I can remember being in Racing in the early days, and there was talk among the coaching staff about banning Leone Nakaroa offloading the ball. And when you think about that, it doesn't make any sense, because that's his game. Yes, you know, he'll have two horrendous turnovers in a game, but like on side as Glasgow or Munster found out to their cost in that final in Ravenhill, he beat Munster on his own with his offloading game. So there are it's very easy to focus on the negative, I think, but with these special players, I think that's what happens with the relationship with your coach. You do have to give them free rein, but it'll be interesting to see. But you mightn't see it for a while, how Finn Russell reacts in that similar situation. Because the only thing comparable would be, you know what I mean, against England or Ireland or Wales in a test game in the last 10 minutes of a game, and or a semi-final of Europe or a semi-final of a top 14. Because league games don't necessarily, it's a different mentality. And I think it'll be interesting to see how he reacts with the benefit of experience, because experience is doing the same thing but better the next time you get that opportunity to learn from a mistake.
Would you bring him on the Lions tour to South Africa?
Yeah, I think he's a great option in the fact that, you know, he plays very, very differently to anyone else in the fact that he can change a game for you. At the weekend, people will say, well, yeah, he changed the game to Exeter's favour. There's validity in that. But I think if you're looking about, the, you know, this, as you said, the the counter attack to that is his performance, or his pulling out of the top drawer, his chip for Vermeer against Saracen. Mm. So I think probably what is lost is in a lot of this is the fact that I think he has been on an upward graph for 24, 18 months, and probably because of the standards he set, he will be hugely disappointed with that rash decision, which but that wasn't the one moment that cost Rass in the final, if you ask me.
Well, I'm going to ask you what that moment was, but I was going to ask you, why a 28-27 no drop goal?
I take you back another 4 minutes, Joe.
Yeah.
Why at 74 minutes on a soccer pitch, on the 5 meter line, on a essentially manicured golf green that you don't kick a goal? Okay, it becomes, you go ahead by two and Exeter have the restart, but I think it just pushes the pressure to a different level on Exeter and on Nigel Owens, in the fact that in the referee's head, he has to give a penalty, unless it's blatantly obvious, that would be a huge talking point. And I know Nigel Owens loves that territory and isn't afraid of any of the hard calls. But if Machinot kicks that penalty, Racing go 2 points up with 6 minutes to go.
Mm.
I, you know, because I think I tweeted after the game about in Cup Rugby, take your points, but I was alluding to the fact for that penalty, I okay. think for me, you just have to kick a goal.
Well, then
it has to be taken
on. No, I hear you. But that kind of attitude extends to not taking the drop goal a couple of minutes later when they're right under the sticks. This isn't a Johnny Sexton in Paris kind of job. What's the thought process there?
Well, for me, a drop goal is the exact same as a try there. You don't have to win a European Cup by 4 points. You can win it by one.
So explain then, because New Zealand, Australia didn't do it last week. Is this a modern trend or something?
No, it isn't. And that's, I haven't spoken to Richie Mwanga about that case in that game. And I haven't spoken to Finn Russell about the opportunity at the weekend. But obviously very, very easy sitting on your couch without a raging heartbeat. But I think if those two boys, the competitors they are, if you pointed that out to them, there has to be some reason of maybe they missed the moment in terms of getting their thought process. Maybe they saw a complete different picture, where I could see potentially in the Australia game that there was, that their last defender was completely tight. But at the same stage, a drop goal there is the same as a try. And in the Racing case, it's underneath the post, literally, where even if there is a charge of a potential risk, pardon, of a block down. But other than that, it's very, very difficult to, because of how close you are to not execute. You could actually hit it horribly and it could go over still.
Mm. Yeah. I mean,
it was so, so fascinating. you kind of go, do you know what is at stake? And this is a guy who has missed five kicks in a European Cup final in his first one. But you just, these things, it's, you know, because it's the whole season and everything more and history that's there. And it can be won by a drop goal. It's no different to anything else, because New Zealand had gone the other way. There'd been a massive overemphasis on drop goals, even in Super Rugby and even Mitre 10 Rugby, but it never went through to Australia, New Zealand at the weekend and in the European Cup. There was two other examples of potentially, winning or cementing your place in history with a drop goal.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't care if his heart rate's at 190 a minute. They know that they're 2 points down, or what are you, a point down, and they know how close they are to the post and they know what the clock's at. Like, it would have crossed his mind and then they would have said, no, we're not going to do that. I just can't make sense of it. I thought I was missing something. So you're a similar boat. You'd have called for that drop goal, clearly.
Oh, you have to be screaming. You'd literally be, if you're a replacement, if you're a part of the coaching staff, if you're one of the front five, I would say, if you're one of the back row, you're just you just say, come on, just put this over, you know.
Simon Ziba played very well. 2 tries, didn't look happy coming off.
Yeah, he had an exceptionally good game. I thought, I wasn't surprised in any way. Potentially felt maybe his lack of minutes combined with potential illness over the last few weeks, he could have been not at 100%, but you would see he was visibly distraught coming off the pitch, and he emptied the tank and he was suffering from cramp. And I'd say he would have loved it, but he always a big game player, always rises to the occasion. And I think the bigger the test, the better he is. And it obviously creates a debate about what's his future in green as well after that performance.
Does it though?
Well, it doesn't, no. But obviously, with, you know, Rob Kearney's retired, Jordan Larmour is injured. My regular name blank.
Will Addison. For a player that you really like, you forget his name all the time.
I have to say it 10 times in my head, yeah. And I won't forget it. Yeah. That's my goal.
You're right on Ziba. I mean, he certainly, with the injuries at the moment, he'd probably be in the 15 jersey in his current form. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't look like that policy's changing anytime soon.
No, and I obviously completely respect and get what the IRFU are doing and what Irish Rugby are doing, keeping their best players at home. But the other side of that argument is if a guy isn't on a central contract and can earn good money overseas, but he's still a very good option for the test team, I think he'll have to be looked at.
I would hope so as well. I mean, and look, geez, Tommy Bow was the best signing, you know, the RFU ever had, because he was obviously not being paid here and he was doing his stuff in Wales and playing for Ireland. I mean,
I think it's ongoing, the changes too. You would like to think, Joe, that potentially in France, yes, there are some horror stories, no doubt about it, but you'd like to think that, you know what I mean, the level of coaching and the level of professionalism is rising all the time. It's in the club's interest to look after players as well, so that everyone with any bit of ambition within them wants them playing at the highest level. So for us in La Rochelle to get 2 players just in the French 31-man squad was a massive disappointment. So that's a burning goal for players and staff within us, because you want to see them hopefully chasing their dreams and playing in blue. And we have boys going for South Africa, playing with Argentina, playing with Fiji. But, you know, when you're coaching in France, you want to see them play for France as well. And I think it is going to go like soccer, I think, in the fact that the club game is going to be huge, but the international game, nothing beats it. And the best players want to play with the best players, irrespective of where they play the game. You know, I think someone, if you look at the ideas that Doug Howlett brought to Munster, that certain a lot of us brought to Irish camp, that's a benefit to everyone.
And a last quick one, just the clock's against me. Do you think if they made an exception for a Ziba and maybe one other or two others, like, but gave where possible, picked the Irish-based player, do you think if they made an exception for Ziba, it would have any material effect on players deciding to move abroad?
No, I don't think so, because I wouldn't be of the opinion of make an exception. I think maybe a flexibility in the rule in general might be important, because I think if you have a guy that's playing from Munster, Ulster, Leinster or Connacht, he's a good chance of starting in the Irish team. If you have more people in top clubs spread around Europe, that creates more competition. The counter argument to that is obviously you want to keep the control of the players and the best players playing. But at this stage, that cycle has nearly gone on 20 years, and the fact that we're so dependent on Munster and Leinster and Ulster players to an extent, that if you can get, you know, for example, in the back row, there are so many good players. You probably have 9 potential starters, even or 12 at Irish level. They all don't necessarily have to be playing in Ireland. Some of them can be playing overseas if they are. But I think also too that not an awful lot of the players playing, they test the market, and if there's opportunities to go, They obviously really, really consider that. But then what it comes back to is that the players in Ireland get really well looked after on and off the pitch. Mm.
Listen, our time is up. Thanks so much. We'll be talking to you over the next couple of weeks. Six Nations resuming. Thanks very much, Ronan.
See you, Joe. Thanks.
Appreciate it. Ronan O'Gara there from La Rochelle. By the way, this Saturday, it is a Six Nations experience again, a different one, albeit you won't be at the Aviva Stadium. Therefore, we're teaming up with Vodafone, who look after all our rugby coverage here, to give you and four of your family or your friends the chance to watch the game on Zoom in the company of Off the Ball's Shane Hannon and an Irish legend that we'll be announcing later in the week. And the deal is you get to ask them any question you want before, during and after the game. So they're your personal reference point throughout. It's an end of week prize. We'll also give away a nightly prize of a Google Home Hub, a signed team poster and an Irish jersey. To be with the chance of winning tonight, tell us, when was the last time the Italian men's team beat Ireland? What year did the Italian men's team beat Ireland? Your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents and we'll call you back over the show. And obviously, we want you and four others ready for the afternoon, Saturday, this Saturday coming 24th of October, 2:30 to 6:00. All the thanks to Vodafone, official sponsor of the Irish rugby team. Hashtag team of us, everyone in.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.